Roughly Speaking with Dan Rogers is brought to you by the Ivy Bookshop, an independent bookstore at Falls Road and Lake Avenue in Baltimore. The Ivy Bookshop, your book is waiting.
It's Tuesday, May 22nd, 2018. I'm Dan Rogers of the Baltimore Sun, and this is Roughly Speaking, a podcast general on news, politics, American life and culture, the tragedy of Trump, Baltimore, Maryland, good food, good books, good and bad movies, and lots of other stuff, including candidate interviews. Today, another in our series. Maryland's Republican Governor Larry Hogan is up for re-election. There are nine candidates on the June 26th Democratic ballot for governor. Seven have raised enough money and built campaign organizations capable of pulling off a statewide win. Ben Jealous, Krish Vigneraja, Rich Maddaleno, Valerie Irvin, who took the place of the late Kevin Kamenetz, Prince George's County Executive Rashern Baker, Baltimore lawyer Jim Shea, and tech entrepreneur, tech guru, Alec Ross. Today, my second conversation with Alec Ross, and this time he brought along his running mate for Lieutenant Governor, Julie Verratti. Neither Ross nor Verratti has sought elective office before. Ross, who lives in Baltimore, worked as a political appointee in the Obama administration, and Julie Verratti, a graduate of George Washington Law School, worked in Obama's Small Business Administration. As you'll hear, she now works in the brewery business. So where were you and what were you doing when Alec Ross asked you to be his running mate?
I was driving to the office, which is my company. I own a brewery in Silver Spring. So by office, I mean tap room and brewery. And he called me about 9:30 in the morning and just sort of dropped it on me. Definitely wasn't expecting it.
Tell us about yourself. What have you been doing in life? And let's start with birth.
Sure about that?
No, seriously, I think people would like to know, like, you know, sure. Where'd you grow up, who your parents were, where'd you go to school?
Yeah, so I grew up in Silver Spring, Maryland. My mother actually still lives in the house that I grew up in, and my father and stepmother live in Montgomery County as well. I have a twin sister. She also lives in Silver Spring. My wife and I live in Silver Spring now. Spent a couple of years at Montgomery College, the community college down in Montgomery County. From there, I went up to New England, finished my undergraduate, was very politically active right out of school, started working in politics, mostly for the Democratic Party, and issue campaigns such as same-sex marriage, the environment, and then moved back down to Maryland to go to law school. Finished my degree there and then went and worked for the federal government, working at the Small Business Administration, working on a lot of programs such as implementing the Affordable Care Act, specifically how it impacted small businesses, as well as veterans entrepreneurship, women's entrepreneurship, and local economic development policies. While I was there, I got the itch to start my own business. So my wife and my brother-in-law and I decided to open a brewery in Silver Spring.
Why a brewery?
Who doesn't want to open a brewery? I get to work in beer every single day. It's an incredible industry to be in. Get to meet a lot of people, and beer's involved.
What's the name of the brewery?
Denizens Brewing Company.
And what kind of brewskis do you brew?
All kinds.
Do you make a nice porter?
We do make a nice porter.
Yeah, it's a nice porter.
It's a nice porter.
What do you call your porter?
Ponch's porter.
Hmm.
The reason why is my brother-in-law, Jeff, when he doesn't get a haircut, actually looks like Ponch from Chips. So that's his nickname.
Oh, I remember Ponch from Chips.
Yeah, there you go.
Eric Estrada.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So what do you make of this phone call from Alec Ross asking you to run as his lieutenant governor
candidate? So in the background of all this, I've been a small business owner operator for a number of years now, but I've never stopped being politically active. So I'm on the board of directors for the Brewers Association of Maryland. I'm on the national board of directors for the Brewers Association. I was one of the founding members of an organization called the Democratic Business Council of Maryland, which, short story, it's Democrats who are business people. We have folks come in and speak to us, whether they're running for office or they're already in office. And Alec came and spoke to our group last year. We met each other, and I got to be honest, I was a true believer from day one. And I just think Alec is the bee's knees. And we created a relationship, talked a lot on the phone. I went to some of his events, just like as an avid Alec Ross supporter.
Go ahead, make your pitch. What's your pitch to people when you're speaking for your running mate?
Well, I don't think you're going to find another candidate that has the vast background that Alec has, from anything from being a former public school teacher to someone who is also an entrepreneur himself, creating an organization that created 11,000 jobs for people from low-income areas, teaching them tech skills to make a better life for themselves, to being a diplomat serving under Secretary Hillary Clinton, to running tech policy for President Barack Obama, to being a New York Times bestselling author. If you're looking for a candidate for governor who's going to move our state into the future, Alec Ross is your guy.
This is one of those questions I always ask because I don't like to take for granted why someone is a Republican or why someone is a Democrat. I don't want to assume I know without asking.
That's a good thing.
I mean, I think it's a good thing to reflect on once in a while. Why are you a Democrat?
I'm a Democrat because I believe in equity for all people. I believe that there is something as good governance. I do believe that the state, with specific policies that we can create, can not only help grow the economy and can help make better educational opportunities for all, regardless of what zip code you're from. And I think that, you know, I've had the experience of seeing good governance. I've also had the experience of being on the other side of regulation as a small business owner. You know, when you manufacture alcohol, you're regulated on the federal level, the state level, and the local level. So I deal with that on a daily basis. And I understand very practically and viscerally how the government can be run well, especially when it's interacting with the business folks around the state, as well as individuals.
So, Alec, tell us about your selection of a running mate here.
I'll tell you what. I was at a Sheraton at like 7 o'clock in the morning on a Tuesday. I'm speaking to this group of business leaders. Honestly, it's a bunch of like guys in gray suits. And then there's this woman wearing a black leather jacket who starts asking these wicked smart questions and making these incredibly sharp observations, again, in the sea of like dudes in gray suits. And I'm like, who is this woman? And I got to know her a little better, and the stuff that she did in government was all kinds of awesome. She ran this program called Boots to Business for returning combat veterans. She's one of the people who made the Affordable Care Act work for small business. And as I got to know her better and better, I'm like, my goodness, this is exactly the kind of person we need in government to get back in government. See, she and I, we see the world through similar eyes. We're very, very different on the surface, but we have very similar values. It's sort of progressive values and business sense. That's who we are. We really believe in progressive social values, but we understand the virtue and value of entrepreneurship and of helping small business. We see the world through similar eyes, even though we look and act a little bit differently on the outside. She's much cooler than I am.
How many years has the brewery been in operation now?
We founded the company in 2013, but we've been open for about 4 years.
Is Maryland business friendly based on your experience in the startup and in the, you know, the daily or yearly operation?
I think that the state, and this is regardless of party, whether you're talking Democrats or Republicans here, will do backflips to get in these large Fortune 500 corporations to come into our state, which is not a bad thing. It's good to have those jobs and those companies. But if we spent just as much effort in helping to take the small businesses that are already here, helping them grow to become the medium-sized businesses, helping those medium-sized businesses become the large corporations, we could do so much more to grow our economy here. And I think that there are—
Well, what would you do? Give me a for instance, since you're touching on that. That's great in concept, but what do you think the state could do?
Well, we could do a much better job in creating gap financing programs. You know, a lot of companies, when they're in their fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth year, they're at a point, no matter what industry they're in, you're either going to grow or you're going to go. And a lot of times when it comes to traditional bank financing, there's always going to be a little bit of that gap where maybe they need $5 million, but the bank's only going to give them $4 million. We could create programs on the state level that can really help take care of that gap right there. And the way that a lot of these government programs exist, some of them exist on the federal level. We have a lot of opportunities in Maryland to make sure we're helping our Maryland businesses grow. So that's one example of what I mean.
Alec, I want to ask you a question I decided I'd ask each Democratic candidate, because I've listened to some of the forums and read our coverage of candidates' debates, and you all generally agree on most everything. So someone sitting at home listening to this or on their iPhone may be wondering, okay, why you? What distinguishes Alec Ross from the other, six or seven candidates in the field that I have to choose from?
Here's how to think about this race. It's 1968 versus 1998 versus 2018. There's a candidate or two who want you to click your heels together like Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz and say there's no time like 1968. Their views are straight out of the sort of Democratic playbook from 1968. There's a candidate or two who every word that comes out of their mouth, it's no different than sort of what Democratic Party doctrine was in 1998. The thing that makes me different, the thing that makes the Alec Ross, Julie Virati ticket different is we're really focused on what's next. We're focused on the future. It's not this sort of boring Bernie Sanders wing of the party versus Hillary Clinton wing of the party debate. We're really focused on what's next. That's thing one. Thing two is we didn't come through the traditional carousel of career politicians who come through the Annapolis farm system. You know, the other people who I'm running against are byproducts of what it means to be a career politician. And I've done a lot in government. You know, I ran massive, massive programs for Barack Obama. So I'm no rookie when it comes to government and governance. But I'm not a career politician. I'm not somebody who thinks they deserve a promotion because they've just been in Annapolis for a long time. And so I think that people want some new faces and new ideas, qualified, experienced, but a little bit of a fresh perspective on some of these age-old issues.
Give me a new idea.
And gun safety. So most people, when they think about gun safety, it's like, all right, are you for gun restrictions? Are you not? Here's how I think about it. Let's innovate. So one of the things that I would love to do is mandate smart grips. You know, in the same way in which you can have an iPhone that only turns on if it matches your thumbprint, so too does the technology exist and is in use in countries elsewhere where a gun will only fire if there is a biometric match with your hand.
Okay, that's a great idea and great technology. So what would you do as governor?
So let's mandate that every gun that is sold in the state of Maryland has to have
that technology.
That's exactly right. Let's talk about the opioid crisis. All this field of Democrats, they'll all say, oh, yes, we need to treat this as a public health issue and not as a criminal justice issue. We need to provide access to treatment on demand. Do I agree with that? Yes. Do all the other candidates agree with that? Yes. What would make the Alec Ross governorship different? Is beyond just access to treatment, let's actually innovate. Let's do things differently. Let's make Maryland the national pioneer in non-opioidal, non-narcotic pain management. There's spectacular stuff coming out of West Virginia University and the University of Maryland for how we can actually get fewer pills into people's bodies and therefore substantially reduce the likelihood of long-term addiction. So it's not just the boring old, here's what a Republican thinks, here's what a Democrat thinks, but who thinks differently? And I really believe that our candidacy is the one that thinks differently.
With your background in tech, understanding tech and thinking about the future, do you think Maryland is already on the way to being a tech hub, or could it become more so?
We have all the assets in the world. We are the home of the NSA, the NIH, the Goddard Space Center, Johns Hopkins, a big biotech corridor on 270. We are home to world-class R&D. The problem is that we make it too difficult to grow your startup here. We regulate small businesses in Maryland like they're Fortune 500 companies. 80% of the startups that come out of Johns Hopkins that raise a single round of financing, they leave the state. The future of Maryland is in Maryland.
So what do you do about that? Because I'm aware of that problem with Hopkins. It is a great place to incubate, but a lot of those companies end up in Cambridge or California somewhere. So
let's focus on two things. First of all, a big reason why these companies leave is because they don't have access to the talent to grow their workforces. The talent is in Virginia, the talent's in North Carolina, the talent's in Massachusetts or California. So a big thing that I think we need to focus on is making sure that we can fill the pipeline of people who can help these companies grow. That's part of why I want universal computer science education. I want every kid in all of our schools, not just 40% of the schools that have it right now, but all kids in all schools to get computer science education so that they can get some of these really well-paying jobs where we know there's going to be job growth.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, I grew up going to public schools in Montgomery County, and I remember taking Spanish when I was in kindergarten. Coding is a foreign language. Why are we not teaching coding in all of our schools as well? That's just one example of growing it from the ground up in our state to make sure we have that talent, not just next year, but 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, to create the culture in our state that will attract tech companies to be here.
And this drives me bananas. I mean, I taught sixth grade at Booker T. Washington Middle School on the west side of Baltimore, and I know for a fact that the students I taught on the west side of Baltimore had the talent and the love of technology to be able to build the skills to get these great jobs, but they didn't have the opportunity. The way for us to be able to keep companies in Maryland and grow companies in Maryland, hey, let's have some of these kids in Dundalk and in West Baltimore and in some of the zip codes around the state where people are struggling. Let's invest in these young people so that they can get these skills, so that these companies will never want to leave because they've got an amazing workforce right here in Maryland.
You still live in Baltimore.
A quarter century now. Going on my 25th year living in Baltimore City. Wife's in her third decade teaching in Baltimore City Public Schools. Love it here.
Baltimore has been going through a lot of struggles for a long time, and it's intensified in the last few years. So there's a lot of issues that we could talk about, lots of problems in the city. And I just wonder, what is the governor's role there as you see it? Some people watch and listen to Governor Hogan, you know, are grateful for what he did when the riot broke out in 2015, the day of rioting. But since then, you know, it's a checkered record as far as the city goes with Governor Hogan. So what do you see as the governor's role with Baltimore City?
Well, the first thing is we've got to stop pulling investment out of the city. Red Line, gone. State Center, gone. Additional resources for Baltimore City Public Schools, gone. I mean, we actually need a governor who cares deeply about Baltimore City and sees it as an important economic engine. I also think that we're never going to have a great Baltimore, a great Baltimore that is everything it can be until we have great schools here. We have some good schools. We don't have a great school system. And I'm really worried about what it will mean if Larry Hogan is reelected as it relates to the Baltimore City public school system. I also bluntly worry about some of these other Democrats who, you know, again, from this sort of traditional carousel of career politicians, the schools in Baltimore and Baltimore City has struggled for a long time with a lot of this crowd and power. So honestly, I think we need somebody who's lived in the city for a quarter century, who really understands it, who's going to fight hard for its equities.
Julie, what's your perspective on that? You know, Montgomery County, sometimes we think folks in Montgomery County, while sympathetic with Baltimore's struggles, are sort of tired of hearing about them, or the feeling that the wealthiest parts of the state are supporting Baltimore and the city still can't get its act together.
Well, I think that, you know, obviously areas in the state, Montgomery County is very populated, but Montgomery County is also having struggles when it comes to economics right now as well. I don't know if you saw the report that came out recently, but in over 10 years, Montgomery County has actually only created 6 net new companies, which is a serious problem. That being said, we need to focus across the entire state, and Baltimore City is one of the economic engines of this state. It's not just Montgomery County. It's not just Prince George's County. It's the entire state that we need to focus on. And if we're not focusing on the largest city in our state and helping it grow, whether it's investing in public schools, whether it's investing in the local economy, supporting our small businesses, creating economic opportunity from an equitable position, We're not doing a good job if we're in office in Annapolis.
There's one thing to invest, but I hear impatience with governance in Baltimore City, that some people feel the state has done its part, you know, in terms of investment, and particularly in the schools, but they don't see sufficient progress.
Well, I think concerns about governance in Baltimore City are reasonable. I mean, look, we've had good mayors, we've had bad mayors. We've had upticks in governance, we've had downticks in governance. And what I think we need in a governor is a governor who's really committed to work with the city and its leaders, its public sector leaders, its private sector leaders. And I also think, for example, that to the extent that the state is investing more resources into the city, it's entirely reasonable. And I say this as somebody who's all in for Baltimore City. Wife's a Baltimore City public school teacher, 3 kids in Baltimore City public schools. If we are going to invest more, then it is reasonable for there to be governance and accountability where people know that we're not throwing money down the hole. I mean, look, that is totally reasonable. And for every dollar of taxpayer dollars that we put into something, there should be transparency and there should be accountability.
I'm curious about the campaign. Anything you'd like to share about campaigning for governor, either one of you? A story you heard, someone you met, a question that you didn't expect, an issue that you hadn't thought about and that someone put in your head? Anything like that? Any anecdote from the campaign?
I'll go first. I mean, one of the issues that I didn't come into the campaign thinking we would do a big policy push on, but which I kept hearing about was childcare. The cost of in-state tuition in the University of Maryland system is just short of $10,000 a year. It's like $9,000-some. The cost of a year of certified childcare in the state of Maryland is $12,200. It's unbelievable. We are number 49 out of the 50 states in the United States of America in terms of financing for childcare. We have less supply of childcare than just about any other state in the country. We are in a childcare crisis in Maryland. I wouldn't have necessarily known this if I hadn't kept hearing it on the campaign trail. And so we've now built out a really robust set of policies to help make childcare more accessible and more affordable. But it was just fascinating. I can't even tell you how many young working moms and dads said, you know what, I never hear politicians talk about, but what's killing us is the cost and availability of childcare.
Quickly, what's your idea on that, though? You said you thought about it and you have some policy on it. Just give me an example.
So I'll give one quick example, an income share agreement. So a lot of the time, people are putting the cost of childcare on their credit card. And, you know, it's people are, you know, are running up tons of household debt because they're putting it on a credit card. There's a model that's working well in other states called income share agreements, where instead of taking on debt, you agree to pay a fixed percentage of your income. And it's agreed to between the provider and the person who's getting the child care. So if your income goes up, you pay more. If you get laid off or what you're making goes down, it goes down. And so it's really innovative, and nobody would have to go into this unwillingly. But if there's a market for this, this is the kind of thing that the state should support.
What about direct subsidy?
So this is important too, since Larry Hogan
tax breaks.
Yeah. So since Larry Hogan has become governor, the maximum household income, the most money you can make in a home to get a child care subsidy, has gone down from $30,000 a year to $26,000 a year. At a bare minimum, I think we need to get that back up to $30,000 a year. I think it's kind of brutal. I mean, $26,000 a year as the maximum you can make to get a subsidy. It's number 49 out of 50 states
in
the United States.
$26,000 is federal poverty level for a family of four, I believe.
That's right.
Or $28,000.
That's right. And we're actually pushing the number down. And what we really should be doing is doing everything we can to encourage working parents who are struggling to stay in the workforce. We're actually creating incentives for people to stay home and not work because childcare is so expensive.
Julie, did you have something you want to share from campaigning?
Sure. I mean, I think one of the interesting things that I've found is being out around the state and meeting people. And I think that when people interact with me, I surprise them a little bit. Because, you know, you see me on paper. Oh, I'm some lesbian from Silver Spring. She must be some far left-wing, you know, socialist coming mm-hmm. here to the ticket. I'm far from that. You know, I'm a small business owner, operator.
Yeah.
I come from that perspective. I'm very socially progressive when it comes to, you know, women, LGBT rights, immigration, the environment. I mean, unfortunately, the environment is a partisan issue. It shouldn't be, but it is. I think it's been interesting interacting with people and just sort of surprising them a little bit with my perspective as a business owner. The rooms that I'm in, you know, I'm a former member of the board of directors for the Montgomery County Chamber of Commerce. You can imagine I was a very different person in that room than most of the people that were there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one of the things that I hope to bring to Annapolis is being able to bridge different parties and different groups and different people and making sure everybody has a voice at the table. It's something I've done my entire life, and it's something that I hope to keep continuing to do in Annapolis.
And when you think that there are, you know, half a dozen different tickets, candidates for governor and lieutenant governor, if you say, well, what is it about, you know, Alec Ross and Julie Verratti that makes them different? What makes us different is it's progressive social values and business sense. We believe that you can be really progressive on social issues, but also be fiscally responsible. That's what makes us, that shouldn't be different, but it makes us really different in this field of candidates.
That's true.
Well, thank you both.
Thanks for having us, Dan.
Alec Ross is a Democratic candidate for governor. Julie Verratti is his running mate in the June 26th Maryland primary. The first televised debate among the Democratic candidates aired Monday night on Maryland Public Television and WBAL's digital channel. After the debate, Ross issued a statement claiming to have stood out from the pack. Let me quote some of it. On issues of crime and gun safety, Alec Ross spoke passionately about students he taught who are now dead from gun violence, and apologized to their parents, saying, "Your babies are dead, we failed you." On the economy, Ross pointed out that Maryland has a thin middle class, and that most people in the skilled trades are aging. He called for Maryland to be the epicenter of apprenticeships to help those who don't go to college find jobs in everything from auto mechanics to cybersecurity. On taxes, Alec Ross stressed the importance of looking for new revenues without raising taxes on Maryland's families, proposing legalizing, regulating, and taxing the $800 million of marijuana sold in the black market annually. End quote. Today's was Alec Ross's second visit to Roughly Speaking. If you want to hear the first episode, in which he provides more on his background, look for episode 305 from last October. There's a link to it in the notes with today's podcast. We've also set up a Roughly Speaking candidates page devoted to all these interviews, more of which will be coming in the weeks ahead. That's our show for now. Your thoughts are welcome by email, Twitter, or on Facebook. For producers Steve Early and Quinn Kelly in the Baltimore Sun Newsroom, I'm Dan Rodericks. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again soon.
Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by the Ivy Bookshop, an independent bookstore at Falls Road and Lake Avenue in Baltimore. This month, the Ivy welcomes Michael Downs to celebrate the launch of his book, The Strange and True Tale of Horace Wells, Surgeon Dentist. Downs imagines the mysteries behind the true story of Horace Wells, who first used laughing gas as an anesthetic, reshaping medicine and humanity's relationship with pain. For more information, call 410-377-2966 or go to theivybookshop.com. The Ivy Bookshop, your book is waiting.